This is Cave Scott Allen of Otico.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Kuhn from LazyCoder.com.
Hello and welcome to Herding Code. We are at NDC Oslo. We're talking to Chris Klug. Did I say that mostly right?
That was pretty right, yeah.
Pretty right-ish. So your talk here was about solid principles?
Yes.
So what stood out for you about that?
No, I've been doing solid principles talks for a while, but this time NDC actually asked me to do a more of a pragmatic tour of when to use it and when not to use it, which is a little bit different, which is a lot of fun. Not a lot of code, but still sort of pragmatic ideas of when I would use it and not, which is kind of neat.
So when would it not make sense? I mean, isn't it it's the best way to do things?
It is the best way to do things, and I do have it in the back of my mind all the time, but I don't go with all the principles. Like the open-close principle might not fit into all scenarios, and Liskov's is one of those. It's a good principle, but it's something I've got at least in the back of my mind. Like, it's not something I go into and really think about while doing it. So I'm a bit pragmatic, because I do believe if you go full solid, 100%, all over the place, you're never going to be shipping anything. And I do actually think shipping is a good feature, too.
Okay. Do you get people that disagree with you? Do you get some interaction,
Most people sort of look stunned when they look at it and look confused when I start talking about it. I get some people that would say that I'm too pragmatic and throw the rule book out once in a while just to get stuff shipped, which is, I'm a consultant. People pay me to get stuff shipped. Mm-hmm. So I get those comments once in a while, and I get comments about being too rigid once in a while, wanting to add a bit too much. Mm-hmm. So you've got both camps, but I think it's, depends on the situation. It's all contextual.
Well, it's good to bring, a lot of the time it's kind of like, okay, we'll do things the right way. Nope, now we got to ship code. Let's throw all the rules out and just ship code and just make it work. So it is good to, as you're saying, to like bring in those principles, but be pragmatic about it.
Yeah.
The one that stands out to me would be the single responsibility principle. It's one of those things that you could like keep applying infinitely until you're just breaking things down really small. I guess, what sort of heuristics or guidelines do you use to say enough is enough?
First of all, I think it's actually one of the principles I tend to use the most, and I think actually most developers tend to use it. I try to look at the thing with one requirement, and then if one require more than one requirement, then I try to like break it apart, but that tends to get really small. Mm-hmm. So I just look at sort of things that cohesively work together and make sense together, not necessarily perfectly single responsibility, but reasonable size classes. I think the whole 400,000 microscopic classes that all get sort of built up at runtime, just it might be nice, but it also adds loads of complexity, and trying to debug an application where you don't know what's actually going to happen until runtime when everything gets assembled, it just, from a debugging point of view, it's too hard for me. Mm. But it's hard to say. I guess it's something that comes with having built software for 15 years. You sort of get into that. You kind of know what it is. Yeah. You just draw a line. It's like, this works, this doesn't.
What kind of things are you building these days?
I build a lot of different things. So with different clients, since being a consultant, I get a bunch of different projects. Yeah. At the moment, I'm actually helping a client to move away from Silverlight to Angular. and changing from SOAP in the back end to REST. Mm. So that's my latest one. I'm mentoring another company moving from WPF to Angular. Wow. There's a lot of Angular in my world at the moment, a lot of front end stuff.
Yeah.
Which I assume that most people in dev do that nowadays. Yeah. Angular seems like the thing that most people do, it feels like.
Yeah. In a way, I think that's the easy transition, or at least in my experience, people that have done something like Silverlight or WPF have an easy time coming to Angular, even though it's a different language sometimes than it is people who have done like jQuery for 10 years, just because of the stateful client stuff.
Yeah, it's like, I felt that being this kind of, not too cool to say, but I used to be a Silverlight MVP, so I did a lot of Silverlight stuff, and I spent a lot of time looking at the MVVM pattern, and I felt like moving back to the web was a step backwards, and I didn't really want to do it, and then all of a sudden you see with Angular, I can take most of my MVVM experience with all the dependency injection, data binding, services, all of the stuff that I was used to, and just bring it onto the web, and I think that's what most, as you say, Silverlight developers or even WPF developers feel really at home doing that. Yeah. The only downside initially would be having to work with JavaScript, but I kind of got used to that. But we're doing everything in TypeScript now.
Oh yeah. And so TypeScript, how's that working out?
That's working very well. It took a while to get used to. I'm happy that I did Angular without TypeScript to begin with, because you can sort of go, this is what I'd like to write in JavaScript. How do I write the same thing in TypeScript to get the same kind of functionality?
Okay.
But it's working really, really well. And as I said, I'm mentoring two different companies at the moment, and they're both going down Angular and TypeScript. Okay. And the whole getting statically typed stuff and getting definitely typed typings for all of the frameworks is just, it makes life so much easier.
So if you were starting a new project today and you had the choice, you would go the TypeScript route?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Well, it was easy to say yeah, but for a client project, yes. Anything bigger, yes. But if I was actually going to do something on my own, I might just go ahead and go with JavaScript, because just, it is easier because you don't need the transpile stage of it.
Yeah. It's,
and I kind of like the flexibility of JavaScript of just being able to augment objects on the fly, which TypeScript makes it a bit more complicated to do that. And especially when you have the Angular scenario of data binding, where you can add like validation properties on your properties, which is freaky from a .NET point of view, but it's kind of useful.
Yeah.
So depends on situation, but probably TypeScript.
Yeah, good.
You know, it's interesting you were talking about the Silverlight to Angular transition, and it does make a lot of sense. And for people that have been doing Silverlight and they're like, I don't want to move all this logic back to the server and rethink everything, and I like the responsiveness and all that. And I've had this theory that Silverlight was really a good bridge to HTML5 and front end, because the web wasn't ready with so many things yet for a while, like media. You couldn't do video well. Like HTML5 video just wasn't around until recent, like in a usable state. Would you agree with that?
Kind of ish.
I mean, like when I first did Silverlight video, like HTML5 video was just like...
Yeah, you know. I agree. I guess the downside to HTML5 video is the lack of DRM support.
Yeah.
So I still think it's going to take a while before we see streaming services online doing HTML5 due to that. But yes, it's a pretty natural transition. I would still have preferred to be able to work, to be perfectly honest, with XAML, because I feel XAML is a bit more structured. The whole, it's cool with HTML and CSS, and it's very separated and all of that, but it's, I don't know, it just feels a step in the wrong direction, and the tooling support you get for XAML was so much better. But it's a definitely obvious transition for me from Silverlight to something like Angular. And I get a lot of questions on why do you do Angular, why don't you do React or something else? React seems to be the new base case, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that I can't get the stuff that I can get with Angular in that way. So I can get the same thing I used to have with MVVM. I can build my HTML and get all of the CSS and everything. I can even hand that off to someone else, like I used to do with Silverlight, and just add functionality when I get it back. So it was probably a good transition. I would have liked the transition to have ended up with something potentially better than HTML5, but probably in 20, 30 years or something, when we get HTML6, we can...
Yeah.
When our grandkids are programming.
Yeah. What would you recommend to somebody that's making that transition? Like, what are some ways to get started or to think about it?
It's actually just jumping head first into it. Just get going. Just decide if you want to go with Angular, which I think is a good option. Take a look at TypeScript if you want to, and then just go ahead and do it. It's actually not that hard. It's syntactical differences, yes, but it's actually not that big of a difference either. It's like double curly braces instead of curly brace binding.
Right.
So it's fairly simple. Just jump right in, find some form of good tutorials on TypeScript and Angular if you want to make that combination. And other than that, you feel pretty much at home.
So when you're not at conferences and, you know, doing all this consulting and stuff, what do you do for fun? How do you relax?
I'm a kiteboarder at heart, so I do kitesurfing.
Wow.
Very little of it, unfortunately, because I live in a bad area, but that's where I got my heart. If I could do that full time, I wouldn't look back a minute.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember, you're in Stockholm?
I'm in Stockholm, okay.
So lots of water, but maybe
lots
no
of water,
wind.
But it's the archipelago, it's kind of cold, it's in Sweden. it's definitely not the perfect spot. So I've started doing mountain biking. And I pretty much hit the gym 4 to 5 times a week as well. So I need to move around and do something physical when I'm not sitting in front of my computer.
Right, right. Good, cool.
And one other thing I have to ask about, your picture from the NDC speakers page was stood out.
I've heard that one before. I've heard everything from "That's freaky" to "Chris has the scariest picture of all at the conference" to "Chris has the cutest picture of all the speakers at the conference," which was probably the weirdest one I've heard.
Yeah.
Yes, it's an old picture of, we went to a rock thing in New Zealand when I used to live down there, and it's all about dressing up and things like that. So I painted my face and dressed up like a hard rocker, and apparently it looked a bit freaky, but it's the only picture I've ever taken of myself that I really like.
Yeah.
So it keeps going with me.
All right.
So what is the best place for kite surfing that you've been to?
Best place I've ever been to would probably be Langebaan in South Africa. So it's about an hour's drive northwest of Cape Town, which is quite neat. And then you can always go into Cape Town and do it if you want to get eaten by sharks, which is kind of the scary part of kite surfing there.
Yeah.
Wow.
All right. Well, this was a great talk. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
All right. And we'll talk to you again soon on Herding Code.